ahead and take out your Bibles and open up to Luke chapter 14. Luke chapter 14, and we'll be starting in verse 31. We're a people who like to crunch numbers. It just seems like whenever we go to set out to do a project or look at things, we want to look at the numbers and see how they are. You know, maybe you've heard the old saying that figures never lie, but liars sure can figure. But the idea tonight I want you to take a look at is to see the idea of how many times, not how many times, not going to look at them all, of course, but to see how the odds are against people sometimes throughout the Bible, to be outnumbered, and to count the cost and to see what you'll do with it. I want to start here in Luke chapter 14, and I want to just pick up on two or three verses here, and to kind of see Jesus realizes that sometimes people are all about the accounting, they're all about the numbers. In Luke 14, look down at verse 31. Jesus says, "Or what king, when he sets out to meet another king in battle, will not first sit down and consider whether he is strong enough with 10,000 men to encounter the one coming against him with 20,000? So the king goes out to battle in the spring to look around. He knows that his troops rank up to about 10,000 of them. He looks at the army that he's getting ready to go against. He starts to kind of do some guesstimation, takes a look at their army. 20,000, outnumbered 2-1. Not looking good. Then notice the next verse, verse 32. It says, "Or else while the other is still far away, he sends a delegation and asks for terms of peace." He knows, you know what, this is not going to turn out well. I'm going to be a king over a nation that doesn't exist, that doesn't have any more left of an army. Then looking at verse 33. He says, "So then none of you can be my disciple who does not give up all his own possessions." He says, whenever you come to me, are you ready to give it all over to serve the Lord? Does it mean you have to sell everything? No. But are you willing to say, you know what, everything I have is now going to be used to honor the Lord with, no matter what's needed? He says, have you counted the cost? Have you looked at it? But the picture here is the idea of, what if you are outnumbered? Well, I guess you need to go make peace real quick so that you don't get destroyed. Count the numbers. I want to go back to the Old Testament and take a look at a few stories. We're going to have to do it pretty quickly because there's quite a few of them I want to look at. Look back at Leviticus chapter 26. And I want you to see the covenant that God made with his people. And I want you to see that he even mentions this idea of being outnumbered. In Leviticus 26, I want you to look down at verse 3. As God's giving instruction to Moses and by way of that to Israel, he tells them this. He tells them this up front. Leviticus 26, verse 3. He says, "If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments so as to carry them out, then I shall give you rains in their season so that the land will yield its produce, and the trees of the field will bear their fruit. Indeed, your threshing will last for you until grape gathering, and grape gathering will last until sowing time. You will thus eat your food to the full and live securely in your land." He says, all you have to do is walk in my statutes, keep my commands. I'll take care of all the harvest. I'll give you the rains when you need them. One season will last right up to the next one because there'll be so much to it. He says, you'll live securely. Everything will be wonderful. Walk in my ways. Keep my commandments. That's all you need. Notice how it continues on. Verse 6. "I shall also grant peace in the land so that you may lie down with no one making you tremble. I shall also eliminate harmful beasts from the land, and no sword will pass through your land. But you will chase your enemies, and they will fall before you by the sword. 5 of you will chase 100, and 100 of you will chase 10,000, and your enemies will fall before you by the sword. So I will turn toward you and make you fruitful and multiply you, and I will confirm my covenant with you." He says, if you will walk in my ways and my statutes and keep my commandments, he says, it doesn't matter if you're outnumbered. He says, 5 of you will send 100 of your enemies running. And it just so happens that if there are 100 of you, you'll send 10,000s running. He says, yeah, you'll be outnumbered, but it doesn't matter. As long as you walk in my statutes and keep my commands. Now, so many times we get caught up in the numbers so much that we go, well, you know, if we get outnumbered too far, it's just time to kind of wave the flag and give up. God says, as long as you walk in my ways, keep my commands, the numbers don't matter. He says, maybe there's just five of you. You'll send 100 of the enemy running. If there's 100 of you, 10,000 of them will go. Numbers don't matter. Now, what if we're not going to keep his commands? Well, let's look down a little bit further. Look down in chapter 26. Look at verse 27 and 28. Here's the changing of the guard. He says, yet if in spite of this you do not obey me, but act with hostility against me, then I will act with wrathful hostility against you. I will punish you 7 times for your sins. What if you don't care about the commands of God? Better start counting numbers, but they won't matter either. Look down a little bit further in chapter 26. Look at verse 36 and 37. He says, as for those of you who may be left, I will also bring weakness into their hearts and the lands of their enemies. And the sound of a driven leaf will chase them. And even when no one is pursuing, they will flee as though from the sword, and they will fall. They will therefore stumble over each other as if running from the sword, although no one is pursuing. And you will have no strength to stand up before your enemies. If you won't keep my commands, if you won't walk in my ways, he says, you're going to run when nobody's even pursuing you. He says, you'll take off and run even when it's just a leaf that's rattling in the trees. You'll be so afraid. And it wouldn't matter how many of your enemies there are. They'll take you down. It wouldn't matter if there are more of you or not. We'll see that in a moment. So you start to look through all these things, and it starts to look like outnumbered. It really doesn't matter much. If you walk with the Lord, hey, 5 will send off 100. 100 will send off 10,000. But if you're not walking with the Lord, you're not keeping his statutes, keeping his ways, look out for rattling leaves, because you're going to get on the run. I don't know if you've ever had a time where you're kind of in a new place. Maybe you're staying in somebody else's house, and all of a sudden you go to lie down and you hear some things moving. You get a little afraid, a little unsure. You don't know what exactly it is. And you finally muster up enough courage, and you go and you look, and it's just a newspaper flapping over the top of the vent. No big deal. But you get afraid because I don't know what's going on. Whenever we don't keep the commands of God, don't expect to know what God's doing. Expect to run, because you're outnumbered, and you're outnumbered by God. Now, you look through these ideas. I want to show you some illustrations of things just like this through the Old Testament. Look at the book of Numbers, Numbers chapter 13. Numbers chapter 13, look down at verse 25. At the beginning of Numbers 13, God says, I want you to send out 12 spies. I want you to go and spy out the land of Canaan. I want you to take a look at it. See, what is it like? How good is it? Do they have a good harvest? Is the land flowing with milk and honey, per se? Is the land fat, which is a good thing? He says, go check it out. Bring back a report. Then, verse 25. It says, when they returned from spying out the land at the end of the 40 days, they proceeded to come to Moses and Aaron and all the congregation of the sons of Israel in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. And they brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Thus they told them and said, we went into the land where you sent us, and it certainly does flow with milk and honey, and this is its fruit. They even named a part of the land Eshal, because Eshal meant cluster. And they had to carry a cluster of grapes and pomegranates on an actual branch or a rod that they carried between two men. You ever seen a cluster of grapes that big? My goodness, that's humongous. And so they named the land Eshal because it meant cluster. So here they were. They come back. They say, everything is wonderful. It's amazing. Says, we just picked up some grapes and we had to carry them on a rod. Not to mention the pomegranates and other things. So here they are, verse 28. Nevertheless, the people who live in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large. And moreover, we saw the descendants of Anak there. Descendants of Anak, well, they're giants. That's what Goliath was. He was one of the sons of the Anakim. Humongous people. They're tall. They'd have to duck to get in the door. Now, notice the next part, verse 29. Amalek is living in the land of the Negev. That's the southern part. It says, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites are living in the hill country, and the Canaanites are living by the sea and by the side of the Jordan. says they're spread out all over the land. They're everywhere. Then verse 30. Then Caleb quieted the people before Moses. Caleb comes in and he says, whoa, let's settle down a little bit. He quiets the people. He says, we should by all means go up and take possession of it, for we will surely overcome it. He says, we should go. We should take it. It doesn't matter how big they are. It doesn't matter how strong they are, how fortified their cities are. We don't care. Let's just go. Then, verse 31. But the men who had gone up with him said, we're not able to go up against the people, for they are too strong for us. Now, we'll give it away. It's not Joshua who's saying this, but it's the 10 other spies. They're saying, no. You're counting it wrong. We're outnumbered here. They're so much bigger than we are. They're spread out all over the land. Yeah, they have great grapes and great pomegranates and everything else. It's wonderful, but maybe you didn't count. It says, we can't do this. This is crazy talk. Then, verse 32. It says, so they gave out to the sons of Israel a bad report of the land which they had spied out, saying, the land through which we have gone and spying it out is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people whom we saw in it are men of great size. Verse 33. There also were we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, the part of the Nephilim. And we became like grasshoppers in our own sight. And so we were in their sight. He says, we knew it even when we looked at ourselves. We compared ourselves to them, and probably in their eyes we look about like a grasshopper. When's the last time you were afraid of a grasshopper? How have you gone, oh! Not very much. Grasshopper's not all that intimidating, unless it jumps on your nose or something like that. But here it is. So here they are. This is the report those 10 spies gave. I want you to see the effect that has on the rest of Israel. Look at the first verse of chapter 14. Then all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. They cried. He said, the land is great, but we just can't do it. It's too big. They outnumber us. They're bigger than us. We look like a bunch of little insects compared to them. They're humongous. Their cities are fortified. They're walled. Yeah, they have great things there, but it's not going to be for us. What a dream. Oh, if we were only strong enough to go. And they cried. They believed it so much that they couldn't do it that they actually cried about it. And they wept about it over the night. So we're outnumbered. We can't do this. It's too much. We just can't. Look down in chapter 14. Look at verse 5. Then Moses and Aaron fell on their faces in the presence of all the assembly of the congregation of the sons of Israel. Verse 6. Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, of those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes. Joshua and Caleb are so distraught that the people have no faith. They tear their clothes. They go, we could do this. This is not hard. Here's why they think they can, verse 7. And they spoke to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, the land which we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. It's great. And these men can tell you about how great it is, these other 10. Verse 8. If the Lord is pleased with us, then he will bring us into the land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. He says it has everything. Whenever you consider it, you know, we think about sweet things like chocolate. To them, honey's the sweetest thing you could have. He says it just flows with it. It almost makes you wonder if every place they stopped, they said, look, there's more honey here. He says it flows with milk. Cattle grow there. There's enough to graze on. Everything's wonderful there. Joshua and Caleb say, if the Lord is pleased with us, we don't care if we're outnumbered. It doesn't matter. But the rest of the congregation believes it. Verse 9, they go on even further, Joshua and Caleb do. They say, only do not rebel against the Lord and do not fear the people of the land, for they will be our prey. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. The numbers don't matter. The Lord is with us. That's what matters. Stop getting caught up in the numbers. Now, here are Joshua and Caleb, and here are these 10 other spies. They're about to get outnumbered themselves within their own nation. Look at verse 10. But all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Then the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel. They get outnumbered themselves. Here are 10 spies who bring a report. The congregation believes the 10 spies. They believe the majority. They say, Joshua and Caleb, you're outnumbered in this. All the congregation picks up stones to kill Joshua and Caleb. By the way, these are going to be the only two people over the age of 61 whenever they go into the promised land. It didn't matter that they were outnumbered. If you notice, God steps in and he comes into the tent of meeting. The glory of the Lord appears. Things change. Joshua and Caleb were outnumbered. They were outnumbered 10-2, just as spies. They were outnumbered and about to be stoned by the whole congregation. But the Lord worked through them, and they get delivered. I want you to see what happens to the other 10 spies. Look over at the end of this chapter. Look down at verse 36. It says, as for the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land and who returned and made all the congregation grumble against him by bringing out a bad report concerning the land, verse 37, even these men who brought out the very bad report of the land died by a plague before the Lord. All 10 of them. This is within 10 days after they get back. All 10 of them die. The majority are struck down by God. If you start counting numbers, sometimes you end up going the wrong direction. If you go with the majority, you might be wrong. But if you keep the commands of the Lord, the numbers don't matter. It's not even part of the equation. If you notice verse 38, but Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh remained alive out of those men who went to spy out the land. They are the only two of the spies who continue on. I wonder if the people ever thought about that. Just a coincidence. All 10 of the bad report, just a coincidence they all die. Not hardly. Even though they were the majority. Israel should have learned a lesson. Trust the Lord. If he goes with you, the numbers don't matter. They're not even really a concern anymore. Take a look at another illustration. In Numbers 16, it goes on. I want to read just three verses here. Numbers 16, verses 1, 2, and 3. It says, now Korah the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi. If that gives you any idea, Korah is a first cousin to Aaron and Moses. It says, with Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Pelath, son of Reuben, took action. And they rose up before Moses together with some of the sons of Israel, 250 leaders of the congregation, chosen in the assembly, men of renown. 250 of them, in addition to Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. So at least 253, maybe there's some more if you count through verse 1. Verse 3. They assembled together against Moses and Aaron and said to them, you have gone far enough, for all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is in their midst. So why do you exalt yourselves above the assembly of the Lord? Korah, Dathan, and Abiram, Korah, first cousin to Moses and Aaron, he says, you know what, we're just as good as you are. We're holy. God has made us all holy. Why do you think you should be the spokesman before God? Outnumbered, 253-1 or 2. Just so happens, they're wrong. God does care that it's Moses and Aaron. They come up and they say, the Lord tells them. He says, well, let's just all gather up our censers. We'll offer an offering of incense in bronze censers. He says, and bring it tomorrow. We'll see who the Lord honors. They all gather together. Some of them won't even go. They say, forget that. We don't care about you. They call them together. They come to offer up their offering. Aaron and Moses offer theirs. This 253, they offer up theirs. And Moses says, if you don't want me to be your leader, and he doesn't say you, he says, if God doesn't want me to be your leader, then you'll die a natural death. If the earth opens up, then you'll know that I'm here because of the Lord. He tells that in the hearing of all the congregation. Within minutes, maybe even within seconds, the earth opens up and swallows all 253 of those men and their families, and they all die. The bronze censers that they used, they tacked up to the altar of burnt offering as a remembrance of saying, don't think you get to choose who's holy and who goes before God. God chooses that. Then they had a trouble with the people murmuring and complaining. God struck them down for that next. Moses and Aaron, they're outnumbered. It doesn't matter, because they're keeping the commands of God and honoring the Lord. Numbers just don't matter. Take a look at another story. Look over at Joshua chapter 7. After the children of Israel have come off of this great battle and going to destroy Jericho, a great high-walled city, fortified, pretty impressive as a fortress, just so happens God says, well, we'll take it down. We won't use any cannons. We'll just walk around it, blow some trumpets, follow my lead. It all comes tumbling down. Of course, Rahab is saved with her family, with scarlet cord. They've just come off of this great victory. They're feeling pretty good. They go up to a little town called Ai. Little small place. The army of Israel is about 608,000 strong. They're strong because they're keeping the commandments of the Lord, not because of their numbers. But they failed in doing that against Jericho. There's a man by the name of Achan. He takes some things that were they should not have been taken. Everything was to be destroyed. And he took a little bit of his own. He veered off away from God, what God had told him. Then Joshua chapter 7 opens up. Look at these first five verses. But the sons of Israel acted unfaithfully in regard to the things under the ban. For Achan, the son of Carmi, the son of Zabdi, the son of Zerah, from the tribe of Judah, took some of the things under the ban. Therefore the anger of the Lord burned against the sons of Israel. But the Israelites didn't know that. The only ones who knew it were Achan and maybe his family. Verse 2. Now Joshua sent men from Jericho to Ai, which is near Beth-Aven, east of Bethel, and said to them, go up and spy out the land. So the men went up and spied out Ai. I wonder if Joshua thought, you know, the last time we sent out spies, it didn't go so good. But let's do it anyway. Then. So he does that. Verse 3. They returned to Joshua and said to him, do not let all the people go up. Only about 2,000 or 3,000 men need to go up to Ai. Don't make all the people toil up there, for they are few. You don't need everybody to go. 2,000 or 3,000, that'll be fine. No big deal. They're a little piddly town. Should be pretty easy. We got them outnumbered. We got them outnumbered even if we only send about 0.5% of our army. Seems pretty good. Then, verse 4, they go for the high number. So about 3,000 men from the people went up there, but they fled from the men of Ai. The men of Ai struck down about 36 of their men and pursued them from the gate as far as Shabarim, and struck them down on the descent, so the hearts of the people melted and became as water. They had them outnumbered. They should have won. But they forgot to keep the commands of the Lord. So the Lord struck down 36 of them. Because they wouldn't honor God. You see, once again, the numbers didn't matter. It was about the relationship with the Lord that they didn't honor. Things change down the road because they decide they will honor the Lord. They destroy Achan and his family the way God says that they should. Let's take a look at another example. Look over at the book of Judges, chapter 7. Judges chapter 7, I want you to look down at verse 12 first. And then we'll go backwards for a moment. I want you to see the numbers. Here's Gideon, army of 32,000 to start the chapter. And they're going to fight against the Midianites and the Amalekites. I want you to see about the number that there are. We'll have to make a little guess here. It says, now the Midianites and the Amalekites and all the sons of the east were lying in the valley as numerous as locusts. And their camels were without number, as numerous as the sand on the seashore. So we couldn't even count their camels. That's how many there were. says if we had to compare it to something that we've seen before, we would say, well, their camels are about in the range of the grains of sand on the seashore. You ever seen a number of things that much? You have to go to some impressive places to see those kind of numbers. You ever taken time just to count the amount of grains that would fill a little sewing thimble of sand? Get tired. Don't want to go that high. Don't want to spend that kind of time to find out something that's that small and minuscule, except for it's so big. He says, that's their camels. He says, the people, well, they're kind of like locusts. Remember here a few years ago, we have all the locusts come in, maybe the 100-year locusts. Man, you had to peel them off everything. You had to sweep them off your porches. They just started to crumble up. They're everywhere. They're in places you don't want them to be. The Midianites and the Amalekites are like that. They're about the same number as locusts. That's a bunch. I don't know if we can put a number on it exactly. I'm going to give you a number just for reference, and I think this is really, really, really small number. Let's go with 300,000. Let's just say there's 300,000 Midianites and Amalekites. I'm sure there are far more than that. But I want you to see this idea of being outnumbered. Look back at the first part of Judges chapter 7. Look at verse 2. The Lord said to Gideon, the people who are with you are too many for me to give Midian into your hands, for Israel would become boastful, saying, my own power has delivered me. Now therefore come, proclaim in the hearing of the people, saying, whoever is afraid and trembling, let him return and depart from Mount Gilead. So 22,000 people returned, but 10,000 remained. Simple math, there were 32,000 of them to start. Well, 32,000 compared to 300,000, well, that's about 10 to 1. The odds already aren't that good. I mean, you start to look at all those people, and if you notice, it's the vast majority. More than two-thirds of them leave. They go, we're going to fight them? If anybody's afraid, go home. This is exactly the way things were to be done back in Leviticus and Deuteronomy. They were told to do this. They do it. 22,000 of them leave. 22,000. You're left with 10,000. 10,000 compared to 300,000? Well, if you thought 10 to 1 was bad, how about 30 to 1? Man, should have left. These numbers don't look good. Look as it continues. Verse 4. Then the Lord said to Gideon, the people are still too many. You know, Gideon's going, boy, you count different than I do. He says, bring them down to the water and I will test them for you there. He says, I'll do the testing. I'll figure it out for you. He says, I'll test them there. Therefore it shall be that he of whom I say to you, this one shall go with you, he shall go with you. But every one of whom I say to you, this one shall not go with you, he shall not go. So he brought the people down to the water, and the Lord said to Gideon, you shall separate everyone who laps the water with his tongue as a dog laps, as well as everyone who kneels to drink. He says, we bring them down to get a drink of water. There are going to be some people who put their face right in the water and their tongue goes right in that big old river or that brook, and that's going to be one group of people. There'll be some other people, maybe we would consider to be a little more civilized. They're going to go down, they're going to put the water in their hands, and they'll bring it up to their mouth and they'll drink. We'll have two groups. He says, you're going to take the group that I want you to take, and not anything more. Verse 6. Now a number of those who lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, who were reaching down to the water and bringing up and lapping it out of their hand, says there were 300 of them. But all the rest of the people kneeled to drink water. Okay, so we have 300, and we have 9,700. I'm sure in Gideon's mind, he's thinking, all right, well, 9,700 is not bad. We can do that. But that's not the way it is. Verse 7. The Lord said to Gideon, I'll deliver you with the 300 men who laughed and will give the Midianites into your hand. So let all the other people go, each man to his home. As those 9,700 men left, and they'd been commanded to leave, I wonder if they thought, whew, that was close. We were almost going to have to fight all those people. 300. 300 compared to what we're going to use, 300,000. 1,000 to 1. Every warrior would have to kill 1,000 Midianites and Amalekites. How'd the odds look? This is beyond being outnumbered. Outnumbered sounds way back in the rearview mirror. notice. It says, so 300 men took the people's provisions and their trumpets into their hand, and Gideon sent all the other men of Israel, each to his tent, but retained the 300 men, and the camp of Midian was below him in the valley. Verse 9. Now the same night it came about that the Lord said to him, arise, go down against the camp, for I have given it into your hands. Gideon, it's all yours. You got 300 men? They have more than 300,000. It's yours. Go take it. But I want you to see what God does. Look at the next statement. Verse 10. But if you are afraid to go down, go with Purah your servant down to the camp. And you will hear what they say, and afterward your hands will be strengthened that you may go down against the camp. So he went with Purah, his servant, down to the outpost of the army that was in the camp. He says, if you're afraid, isn't it interesting that God is willing to deal with Gideon in being afraid? From earlier parts in the story that we didn't look at, Gideon is not afraid because, God, I'm not sure if you're strong enough. Gideon's afraid of saying, I'm a nobody. How are you going to do this through me? Gideon's problem isn't with the Lord. Gideon's problem is with himself. I'm a nobody. I'm no great warrior. When the story opens up a couple chapters ago, Gideon is threshing wheat in the middle of a wine press so that he doesn't get his harvest stolen by the Amalekites and the Midianites. He's kind of a fraidy cat. But you can understand why, because they were all coming in, taking all their food from the harvest every year. So he's really being wise. Now, he says, all right, 300, 1,000 to 1. You're outnumbered. If you're afraid, Gideon, I'm going to take care of you. Go down, take Purah with you. Sneak down there. Listen to what they're saying. And one of the people who's on the outpost has this dream. He says, I dreamed that we got destroyed by a man by the name of Gideon. Can you imagine hearing your name mentioned by somebody else in their dream that they're having? He said, we can do this. We can do this because the Lord's with us. And sure enough, in chapter nine, in verse 19, he says, so Gideon and the 100 men who were with him, they divided up into three groups of 100, came to the outskirts of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, when they had just posted the watch, and they blew the trumpets and smashed the pitchers that were in their hands. They don't have a sword. They have a pitcher in one hand that's covering a torch, and they have a trumpet in the other. Outnumbered 1,000 to 1, more than 1,000 to 1, and they don't even take a sword with them. Apparently numbers don't matter much. Then, verse 20. When the three companies blew the trumpets and broke the pitchers, they held the torches in their left hands and the trumpets in their right hands for blowing and cried, a sword for the Lord and for Gideon. They don't have a sword among them. Who are they counting on? Who are they counting on to be their sword? The Lord takes care of this, not us. And sure enough, as the army wakes up in the middle of the night to all this ruckus of hearing pitchers break and seeing flashes of these torches and hearing these trumpets being blown like alarms of getting them ready, they end up killing each other. And an army of 300 destroy at odds better than 1,000 to 1 being outnumbered. You may think, why have we gone through all this tonight? Why hit on all these things? I'm going to tell you, if you'll honor the Lord with your life, numbers don't matter. When you're outnumbered, who cares? If you're not going to walk with the Lord, numbers still don't matter. You can have more than the enemy and still get destroyed. The idea of being outnumbered, who cares about numbers when you're with the Lord? Joshua and Caleb said it best. Said, the Lord's with us. Who cares if they have fortified cities? Who cares if we're just grasshoppers compared to them? We'll take it if the Lord is pleased with us. That's what we need to remember. Verses that were read at the beginning out of Matthew chapter 7. It says, enter through the narrow gate. It says, there are going to be a whole bunch of people who see the broad way. They're going to take that road and they're going to meet destruction. If you're going to go with the majority, expect to meet death. Expect to meet destruction. And then he says, there are going to be a few who find this narrow way. There'll be an even smaller number who enter through it. Expect to be outnumbered in this life. Expect to be outnumbered in what you're doing, holding to the commands of God, but also expect to be carried through. Enter through the narrow gate. It says in verse 12 in Matthew 7, treat people the same way you want to be treated. That's the narrow way. You won't see it very often. The vast majority of people will have no clue as to what you're talking about. And they're headed to destruction. You can join in with them. You can decide, I want to go with the numbers. I want to go with the majority. Maybe like Joshua and Caleb. We want to join the 10 spies who all think the same way. There's more of them. They must be right. No. All 10 of those spies were destroyed by a plague within 10 days. The question is, do we pay too much attention to numbers? Do we pay too much attention to being in the majority? Do we pay too much attention to looking at it on the page as opposed to paying attention to, are we walking in the ways of God? Are we honoring Him? And are we doing what's pleasing in His sight? Because that is what carries you through. That's what Gideon did. That's what Joshua and Caleb did. That's what Moses and Aaron did. You start to notice, God told them from the get-go, if you stand with me to honor me, it'll only take 5 of you to send 100 running. It'll only take 100 of you, when you're outnumbered 100 to 1, to send the 10,000 fleeing. That's what we need to decide. Will we honor the Lord to do things His way, even if we're in the vast minority? Even when it's not the popular thing to do? Even when other people want to stone you or kill you for doing it? Because that's exactly what Jesus did. You ever counted how many times Jesus' life is hanging in the balance that people want to kill Him or stone Him before He gets to the cross? Count them up sometime. You'll be impressed. He's in the minority a lot. And whenever He teaches, people leave. The question is, I want to be in the minority. Do you want to be in the minority? Because it's only a few who will find the narrow gate. Don't look for the numbers. Look for what's pleasing before God. That is when God brings success, and the numbers don't matter.